Ars of Sifiri is proudly hosted by Red Nation Online. We can be found on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and everywhere else you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome to episode 35 of Ours is the Fury, and the Ottawa Fury just beat Minnesota United!
Yeah!
Wow!
Who expected that? No goal conceded, and pretty much dominated the whole game. What more can we ask for? A rocking crowd?
Yeah, beautiful day.
A little windy, but yeah. Still beautiful.
Yeah, the wind worked in our favor, I thought, in the first half. Minnesota had a lot of trouble in the wind, and the second half the wind kind of died down, and it worked in our favor.
And the voice you're hearing right now is, of course, Ryan and Tim. Yeah. That's Tim.
We had to help him out with
that. I forgot.
He thought his name was Blocksmith. And Kendra isn't here today.
Where is she?
I don't know, probably collecting some crazy interviews for us.
Yeah, and we have one today, actually. So
yeah.
Ryan Richter interview. And there's a couple more coming, so.
Stay tuned for that. But let's get right to it. Let's get to the game. So the Fury lined up with pretty much the strongest formation that they could have, besides maybe Richie Ryan, who wasn't fit.
Yeah, but he came in. He was subbed in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, but I mean, he wasn't like fit for the starting 11. And so we had, at left back, Paul Trinieri, which is a position he hadn't played before, right, even in preseason.
He might have in preseason, but this is his first time in the regular season, replacing okay. Randolph.
And then the two center backs were Colin Falvey and Alves, and then right back Ryan Richter, and of course Pizer in goal. And it wasn't really 4-3-3 this time, it was more like a 4-2-3-1, with De Guzman and Patterson, the two holding midfielders, and then Oliver, the more offensive midfielder, and Paulo Jr. on the left wing, Hayworth on the right wing, and then our lone striker, Heinemann.
Yeah, what did you think of Paulo Jr.?
Oh, he was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very dynamic. He's a good little dribbler.
Huge difference from last year on the left wing.
Yeah. Yeah, who do we have, like Maillard?
We had Maillard last year, yeah.
Yeah.
And not only is he a great player, but he seems really nice as well. Like, and he came over and celebrated with the fans after the game. I thought that was a really nice touch. Like, he's just very approachable. Great guy.
Yeah, it's nice to have that win at home. And we had the big celebration after the Atlanta game last year at TD Place. And maybe it'll be a tradition.
Yeah, nice to finally win one at home while we waited so long for them to win at Lansdowne last year. And Minnesota had that as well.
And not a bad crowd. I think we had 5,093 people was the number they reported in the end, which is more than I expected, to be honest.
Yeah, it was raining in the morning, and they said the forecast was rain, and then it cleared up. So I was happy.
Yeah, it was a nice turnout. You'd like to see a little more, but being spring, and it's not super, super warm out there. It's a nice little number.
Yeah, and we finally got to see Julian De Guzman, which is just unbelievable that we get to see him in our own team. Who would have thought that a year ago?
It was kind of strange that they misspelled his name on the Jumbotron for the starters.
I didn't notice that.
It was De Guzman.
Wow. It's just amazing, though, like, It's real now, right? It's like, and he was moving the ball well. Amazing anchor back there, doing exactly what's expected.
Yeah, like some great range in terms of passing and like winning so many balls. Like when I rewatched the game, I paid special attention to him, and he's just by miles better than everyone else on the pitch.
Yeah, the link up too, right, with him and Paulo Jr. And then you get those final crosses in the box. Now it's looking really good.
For sure. Yeah, we almost scored early, like in the 9th minute or so, when Paul Jr. kicked it like just from inside the box, and I think it was a handball. It's kind of probably not really a handball because
the old ball to hand handball argument. Yeah, there's a lot of those. could be worse. Watching some of the Fort Lauderdale Edmonton game, there's a lot of missed calls in that too. It's not only happening to us, it's league wide. So
yeah, there's not like a giant conspiracy against us that we know of.
That we know of.
I thought the referee was okay. He was pretty decent.
Yeah, it's easy to say that when we win.
Yeah. I mean, I missed a couple of handballs. You missed one on us, one on them. The offside.
Oh, yeah, that should Oliver goal. Was that offside?
No.
No? Okay.
No. Wow.
Yeah, there's a great shot of it on the side. You can see it. He's like a yard and a half onside. But it was really quick, I guess.
So what's happening with Minnesota? They haven't scored yet this season. I know they had the bye week, so they've only played two games. But
yeah, 0-0 in their first game, I believe.
Yeah, so it's weird looking at the table. Like, Minnesota's second last, and then last is San Antonio. It's like upside-down table.
Yeah, and Indy is second.
Yeah, and Atlanta's third. And we're in the middle, so it's just like
but
last
year. But it's very early, let's not forget that. And Cosmos are number one.
Yeah, they've gotten at least a point every game. So I think they're two wins and a draw. So
yeah. I don't know if they're scoring well, but their keeper is crazy. He's all over the place. No, Minnesota.
Oh yeah, yeah. It worked out for us. Like he'd come out and challenge at times, and it'd be like just run around him. Like, we missed a couple easy ones.
Yeah, when he handled the ball there, that was weird. He ran out and like I think he thought he would have. We would be still in the box or something, but he wasn't.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that's a yellow card when a keeper holds.
It's not always a yellow.
I thought it was a red.
It can be red if it, I think if it denies a goal scoring opportunity. And this one wasn't a clear opportunity.
Yeah, there's no one around him. He wasn't going in the net.
That's the difference.
He just thought he was in the box.
Yeah. So the Minnesota keeper, if you didn't see the game, he was outside the box and he grabbed the ball. So I thought it was a straight red, but I guess it was a yellow because it's not a goal scoring opportunity.
Yeah, what followed was a great free kick by Nicky Patterson, who had like a couple of good free kicks.
He's taking all the corners too, wasn't he?
Yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah. John's like, I don't remember much of Saturday.
Yeah, it was quite a party in the supporters section, that's for sure. One talking point I don't want to forget, though, is Heinemann had a spectacular game, I thought. Really good game. Probably the best I've seen from Heinemann.
Yeah, he was getting good service. And I remember seeing a long ball where he headed it forward, and it went to somebody on our team. And I'm like, oh, my God,
but
it worked.
He also made, like, lots of runs. He wasn't offside as much as usual. And on the goal, okay, he got a little bit lucky, but he did beat, like, two defenders, like, almost from the corner flag. Like, he wasn't in a dangerous position, somehow got into one and then coolly finished, you know, not making the keeper. So, you know, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was nice to see after Atlanta. It wasn't his greatest game. And, yeah, like, really, really nice finish. And support section just went up when he scored. It was crazy.
So just 14 goals to go for Heinemann then?
Yeah, we'll keep the count all season long. Keep it going. So, not good news for Minnesota that one of their main signings of the offseason was injured in this game. Anyone see what happened exactly?
No, but it looked pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty serious, eh? I'll have to check up with our sources in Minnesota and see what's how long he's injured.
Yeah, awesome game. Couldn't ask for anything better. It is kind of reminiscent of the Carolina game last year where we won 4-0. Hopefully they can build out a little more this year than that game last year. But, yeah.
And it, like, from a supporter's point of view, it was fantastic, too. Like, we were pretty, section was pretty full. And
yeah.
It was working well.
It was good. It was loud. There was a time where I actually had to go to the washroom, and I left the section, and then when I was coming back to the section, I was like two sections over, and I looked, and the whole section was almost full, like no seats at all, and it was so loud, it was unbelievably loud, and it was like echoing throughout Lansdowne, and I was just completely impressed. I was like, wow, you don't realize how loud it is when you're in the section, but when you step away from the section and watch, you're like, It's quite something. It's it's starting to look really good here in Ottawa.
Another player we should talk about before we wrap this up is Oliver in his position, because we saw him more like as a winger, or maybe have him play as an out-and-out striker. How do you guys think he did there in the number 10?
He wasn't spectacular, but I think he's pretty solid there. I think it might take a few games for him to kind of settle into the role.
He floated over to the right a few times, too. Like, he wasn't, like, mainly 10, only 10.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's only the second game that he's been like this, so we'll see. It seems if we keep winning, yeah, do it.
Yeah, I have no problem with him getting to start there, game in, game out.
Cool. And that pretty much wraps it up, unless anyone else wants to add something.
We won 1-0, and yeah.
Awesome day. Like, I still had adrenaline on Monday, and I had no voice, like, on Sunday, and even on Monday.
Yeah, my voice came back late yesterday.
So, let's take a break.
This is Oliver, and you're listening to Ours is the Fury.
Welcome back, guys. Now we'll have another treat for you, because Kendra went out and interviewed another player of ours, and that's Ryan Richter, who is from Pennsylvania originally and was drafted by the Philadelphia Union until eventually he came to us from TFC. Enjoy the interview.
So after you were finished university, you were drafted into the MLS to Philadelphia. So describe that experience.
That was pretty incredible. You know, because obviously I had a decent senior season, so I thought that there was a chance, you know, I thought that I would have a chance to be drafted, but the fact that I was, you know, drafted by Philly was pretty incredible and pretty special, and, you know, it was nice to get that kind of attention, you know, especially from everyone, you know, at school, everyone I grew up with was pretty excited for me, and it was pretty cool. Unfortunately, on the field, it didn't work out the way that I wanted to, you know, but still to, you know, have played there and to, you know, had one season there, it was really special to me and my family.
Mm-hmm. What was kind of your best experience with Philadelphia Union?
My best experience, I got the chance to play against Real Madrid in the Lincoln Financial Field at Eagle Stadium. There was 70,000 people there. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I had some pretty cool picks going up against Catan, Ronaldo, and two World Players of the Year in the prime. So it was pretty exciting experience, especially because I was going up against Ronaldo for the second half, one-on-one, pretty much the entire time. So it was pretty cool. You know, playing against at that time, he was reigning World Player of the Year. So it was a pretty incredible experience.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I still have some pics from from that game that are hanging up in my house, and my parents keep them hanging up.
Oh, that's so sweet. Do they, like, I don't know, do you guys talk to each other too much, like, while you're playing?
No.
Like, did you?
No, I didn't really exchange too many words. I'm kind of a bit starstruck if I have to admit it.
I bet.
It's not exactly like going up against an NHL winger, but
that's awesome. How was your experience in Toronto with TFC?
I loved it. I mean, you know, Toronto is an amazing city. First of all, you know, I didn't really know what to expect going there. I had been to Canada only a few times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I expected it to be a lot different than it is. It's, you know, not really any different from home for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my time with Toronto, you know, they have a really good organization and a lot of people who will do anything for the team to do well. It's just pretty insane that the team has never actually done well, because some of the facilities that they have, the people that work there,
mm-hmm.
You know, all the resources that they put into the team is everything that you want to succeed as a player. So it really is interesting that the team has never done well, because they do so many things right, mm-hmm. that, you know, in my opinion, they deserve to do well.
Yeah, I think so too. So when you were at Toronto, you came to Ottawa on loan, and I was just curious, how does it feel to be kind of like with one team and on loan to another? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so it was, you know, I wasn't playing much in the beginning of the season in Toronto. And so I went to the coaches and said, you know, can I go on loan? You know, I want to go somewhere where I'm going to play games. And I was talking to Nikki and telling him I was looking to play. I think he spoke with Mark, and then I got a call from Mark a few days later. I knew the first time I talked to him that this was a guy I wanted to play for.
Yeah.
So then when I ended up coming here, it was actually right before the summer break last year. So I had to wait a couple weeks before I played a game, but I could tell as soon as I came here that this was a place where I fit in, a place where I thought that I could do well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was at a point in my career in Toronto where things weren't going the way I wanted to. So coming here was really like, really helped me a lot, you know. And I knew halfway through my time last year that at the end of the year I was going to sign with Ottawa full time.
Another great interview by Kendra. I hope you enjoyed that, guys. Likely in the future you'll see the rest of the interview on the Sony Monday Riot blog. And you can expect more great interviews in the future. There's already one in preparation.
Yeah, that's a really good series that she has going there on the StonyMondayRiot.com. It's the Fury interview series. I think there must be at least 10 players so far in the last year and a half. And it goes really in depth, like they're like 10,000 word type things. So that's just a piece of the interview. I think the interview was like an hour long. So, yeah.
A great read when it comes out.
Long.
As always.
So we have some games this week.
Yeah, we got the V Cup game against FC Edmonton, and then we have another NASL home game against the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. But before we discuss those, we should probably do our listener questions.
Yeah, that's my favorite part.
Yay! And who else but to start with Namu, who is asking, how do the Fury keep growing? What do you think is more important, on-field results or off-field marketing, if you had to pick? Well, I'm an Ottawa Fury fan, so I'm always going to pick the results. Plus, I'm getting sick of discussing marketing. It's just, we've beaten that horse to death, I guess.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done. It is what it is for now, and until it changes, I don't see the reason in talking about it. But, yeah.
Yeah, results will always get it done.
Yeah, it's all about results for me.
And Andrew McVicker asks, what was your favorite chant or song from Section Dub on Saturday?
No, that's yours.
Mr. Lou, Mr. Lou.
That's terrible.
That's horrible.
No one wanted to do that one with me.
Yeah. I think, what's that stop drop?
Yeah, the DMX.
DMX? That's pretty original for soccer. I like that. And it seems to get a lot of people that aren't in the supporters section like into it. So I like
that. Yeah, we got some comments where people were tweeting that they enjoyed that. But the Tommy Heinemann song, I think, was probably the biggest highlight for most. Does anyone know how it goes?
Something about soup. And Tommy Heinemann.
If you know how the lyrics go, tweet us at Ottawa Fury.
Oh, I didn't even know there was a Tommy Heinemann. I know the Tommy one, but yeah, it's a lot, and it's nice to see the culture grow and see like different chants coming from different places. So, a lot of original stuff. And our next question comes from Mark Lapointe. He says, "What's your ideal starting 11 now that everyone is fit?" And which everyone's not fit. Richie Ryan got hurt this weekend in training, right? Hurt his knee.
Yeah, and of course we still have long term injury Davies.
Yeah, so not everyone's fit, but I like last week's starting 11. I maybe Wiedemann starting and then Heinemann coming in the last 20 minutes.
I don't know. I'm so happy with Heinemann's performance. I'm probably going to advocate for Heinemann because I haven't seen that much from Wiedemann yet. So
yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I have to go with Heinemann.
Even Blocksmith. Wow.
I like how we're all backwards now. We're all.
Well, in the midfield, that's where it gets very interesting because with Richie Ryan, he's injured right now, but when he's back, and with Ubi, you know, where do we fit them in if we want Patterson and Oliver and De Guzman to play? I would say De Guzman is, like, you can't take out of that 11.
I don't know how much Ruby we'll be seeing this year.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think he'll be, like, a utility, like, a guy who comes in, you know, to fill those spaces, because he has that ability to play different positions in the midfield. So.
I think the right winger position where Haworth plays, it would be a position where I can see other people given a start, like maybe put Oliver there, or
instead of the number 10 role.
But yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. We'll probably get we'll probably talk about that in upcoming episodes as we see our players perform more games.
Yeah, and it's kind of related to the next question too.
Oh yeah, Theo Gauthier, who is at Mimglow, asked, with Julian De Guzman showing he's a class apart, Nick in form that we've never seen, what happens when Ryan and Ubi fully fit? Well, we did sort of address that. And then Christopher Rolf, who's at Penny for Cliche on Twitter, asked, with how serious Montreal take the CCL, are they the favorites going into the Voyageurs Cup?
I'd say Vancouver's the favorites going into the Voyageurs Cup. With if you just look at performance so far this season,
I'd say probably Montreal is probably not
the least favorite out of
the
MLS.
The all the extra games they played in the CCL this year already.
Have they won? They haven't won an MLS game yet this year, too.
Yeah.
Something worth
it. But they haven't had very many.
I think they're 0-4.
Is that right?
Yeah. So.
And they made it to the final, which we're going to, so pretty pumped for that.
Yeah, I think for Champions League, or for Voyageurs Cup, Vancouver's probably the heavy favorite. And then Toronto, then Montreal, I would honestly say. Then I know they just added Kenny Cooper.
Then. And then
Edmonton. Oh, yeah, Ottawa above Edmonton for sure. That's
It really depends on how each team takes it, because I know they play a lot of, you know, backup guys in the semis. They don't take it all that seriously until the final. So it's really who they put out there.
Yeah. So next question comes from Teo. He's at Mimglow on Twitter. Should the NASL rename the spring season? People in North America confound spring with exhibition because of baseball. I don't know. I think I totally understand what Teo's saying here, but I think
I've never heard of that.
I think what they're trying to do is copy like how it is in the Americas, right, with the spring and fall season, and they're trying to keep the purity of the sport. It's something I think it's an advantage of NASL. They could maybe rename them, maybe a branding opportunity.
Well, they could always just have one regular season, like. No one would be affected by that too much unless there's a World Cup or Gold Cup or something going on.
Yeah, the trouble is with the size of the league.
Yeah.
If you play round robin, a two-leg round robin, it's short. And if you play a four-leg round robin, it's too long.
It's too long.
So,
yeah. I think once we get the 18 teams, it'll be perfect. Right? 36 games?
Yeah.
That'd be about right. And then cup games in there, so.
And Andrew has another question for us. He wants to know, why or why not was Saturday's win over Minnesota the biggest victory in franchise history? I think it was, on and off the pitch. Well, it certainly feels like one of our greatest victories. I would probably argue that our first victory ever was a pretty big victory. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly the biggest victory of the season.
Yeah, it's so far. I think it's so close that we kind of... I think of the last game, the last big victory as being the biggest victory, but I still think the Carolina game last year, the first one ever.
4-0.
Yeah.
This game, I think we played better than in the Carolina game. I think time will show, too. Like, if Minnesota goes on, like, a 5-game losing streak, then this win won't look that impressive. But if Minnesota storms back and, like, wins the rest of the games for the rest of the regular season... this win is going to look really impressive. So I think a lot of it, unfortunately, has to do with Minnesota's form going forward. But yeah, it's right now I'd say it's probably our biggest win, followed by the Carolina win last year.
So that brings us to the end of listener question time. Thanks for all your questions, guys. Keep tweeting in at Ottawa Fury. And I'd also like to mention to you that we now have a Facebook group, which I think is facebook.com/ Ours is the Fury podcast. Or you can just search for Ours is the Fury and it should pop up. So keep engaging with us. And we're getting so many questions now that we can't even put them all on the podcast. So that's awesome. And keep posted for some exciting Voyageurs Cup related interviews with people you may know.
You're listening to the Hours is a Fury podcast. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
Welcome back, guys. Before we talk a little bit about the news around the league, we just wanted to mention that if 3 Fury home games in a week isn't enough for you, the Academy team is also playing at TD Place on Thursday in an exhibition game against the Gloucester Celtics. So check that out. It's free.
Yeah, it should be good. They're a U19 team, right? The Fury Academy. And they're going to be playing in the PLSQ, mostly at Algonquin and Carleton.
Yeah, Keith Harris.
Yeah, it's kind of Carleton TD Place until after the Women's World Cup, and then it goes to Algonquin.
Yeah, so it'll be exciting. They're going to be facing some tough competition. It's a league I've followed a lot in the last couple of years and been to quite a few games, and it's going to be a tough ride for them, and it's a good challenge for them to develop. But what else is happening around the league?
Well, New York Cosmos beat the Tampa Bay Rowdies 2-0, and they had a pretty good crowd, 12,550. But they mainly came out to see former soccer players because Pele and Beckenbauer were there for the home opener.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if New York keeps it up. There was some other news that I was reading today that they actually made some progress on a new stadium in New York for the Cosmos. And they have a couple school boards on their side and some real estate developers. So you're going to be hearing more. If you want to read more, check out Empire of Soccer. They're really following this really closely. And hopefully New York gets their stadium sorted out. Hopefully they get it sorted out before NYCFC. Mm-hmm. And the other games in the league, what were some of the scores there, John?
Carolina Railhawks were beaten at home against the Atlanta Silverbacks 2-1. They had around 4,500 people there, which is not bad for them at all. That means that the Silverbacks are currently tied with Indy for second place, which, you know, those are two teams we didn't expect in the front of the table.
Yeah, and don't expect San Antonio to be in last place either. I think it's their defense. From the two games I saw, they're like broken down very easily. They're missing Adrian Cann so far this year too, right? Is that with an injury?
Yeah, he's still injured.
And they got Nana Adekora in on the left.
Who does not look great.
Who does not look good. It's not what we expected out of Adekora in the NESL so far.
Yeah, the San Antonio, that's 2 losses at home for them already.
In a game we all watched together, kind of, online, anyway, was FC Edmonton, Fort Lauderdale, our next two opponents.
Yeah, it was a great game, really back and forth.
It's a goal fest. 5 goals in this game.
Well, Edmonton-wise, goal fest, yeah.
Yeah, Edmonton's a whole different team this year. Their attack is so much faster.
I'm glad to hear it was such a great game, but that attendance number of 2,351 is pretty disconcerting.
Yeah, I think Edmonton's last in the league in attendance so far, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
No, it's not good.
But when Ottawa Fury go out to play, I'm sure it'll sell out. Next week, next Wednesday. So if you live in the Edmonton area, like drag some friends along. That's what we've been doing. Like, and just talk to everyone you know about the team. Like, it's a special thing to have a team in a city, and especially like Alberta. Like, it's the only soccer team, you know, besides the Whitecaps, is the only soccer team in the West. And the closest team after that's what, Real Salt Lake and Seattle, which are both 15, 16 hours away.
So. Well, Calgary just announced a new W League team.
Yes, Foothills is doing a lot, and they're also having a new stadium complex. Hopefully it goes through. It's going to be with the Flames and the Stampeders.
That'd be great.
Yeah, so you don't have soccer, Canadian football, sounds familiar, and the new NHL arena all in the same spot in Calgary. And I believe it's just north of the Greyhound station, if you're familiar with downtown Calgary.
I am not.
You're not.
Tim, none of our listeners are.
Tim has never left Ottawa. Even though he was born in England, he's never left Ottawa. Yeah. So was that all the games in the league? That's weird with these 11 teams.
That's it. The bye. Jacksonville had the bye.
Yeah, oh yeah, Jacksonville. How could you forget the new guys? So this weekend, well, first we play Edmonton.
Yes.
Hopefully you're listening to this before that. And then we play Fort Lauderdale. Who should we look out for in Edmonton?
Well, if it was last year, I would say Boakai, but he really hasn't played at all under Colin Miller, and there has been an interview where Colin Miller basically just called him really immature, and he's basically teaching him a lesson and keeping him on the bench until he smartens up.
Yeah, that's what's going on. Was that written somewhere online?
It was on some kind of radio show. I can't remember whether it was Soccer Morning or something along those lines.
Yeah, that's bad for him, but that's good for us because he
destroyed us last year.
And Montreal, too, last year, to be honest.
Yeah, Boakai's a very promising player still. Hopefully the maturity level does happen with him because I think he'll mean a lot to the Canadian national team. But if he's on the bench Wednesday against Ottawa, I'm fine with that. That actually makes me happy. But there's other players that we have to worry about. Niasse, for sure.
Yep.
Look dangerous.
Player of the week last week. It's him. I think it's him on the right and Lance Lang on the left coming down the wings. Just deadly.
And Lang's just the delivery. He's been like that game on the weekend. He's right at players' feet every time. He's Edmonton's looking pretty good, actually. Go support your team, Edmonton. Jeez.
But I do prefer that style that they seem to be playing this year, where they open up more and they try to go for goals more, because I think that suits our playing style a lot better, too.
Yeah, hopefully we can counter. Fort Lauderdale kind of caught on, and they were countering more in the second half against Edmonton. So hopefully Ottawa can accept. If we play like we played against Minnesota...
Oh yeah,
I think we'll have some really good chances against Edmonton.
And hopefully both coaches will line up a bunch of Canadians, given that it's Canadian Cup competition. And it would be kind of nice if we would see maybe Trafford and Becky in center backs, just because.
Yeah, it's a short week for Edmonton. They play on Sunday, and they have to travel. So hopefully that favors us a little more.
Yeah, I think DeSantis will manage the squad. He's done pretty well at managing the squad. He's never run a player into the ground, physically. Well, in the last year, we've seen him here, so. It'll be interesting. It's going to be an exciting game. Me, personally, it's my favorite thing to look forward to every year is the Voyagers Cup. And I'm kind of sad that I'll be missing a half next week because of the CONCACAF Champions League final.
When you say you're missing a half, does that mean you're planning to watch the second half in Montreal?
I am going to watch the second half in Montreal, yes.
Okay, I was thinking of sort of like maybe listening to it on the radio on the drive home or something.
Yeah, well, we'll sort that out after the podcast, but yeah. Well, maybe we'll just go in separate cars.
I think we are, actually. Yeah. But that is for our other podcast where we discuss the logistics of going to soccer matches.
So, the big game besides the Edmonton game is this weekend.
Yeah, we're going to play against the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, who just played away against FC Edmonton. So that should be a huge advantage for us because they're two away games on the bounce. Haven't seen too much of them. You guys watched the FC Edmonton Fort Lauderdale game, so
they look strong. First half, and then they just kind of let it go. They had a 2-1 lead going into the 75th minute, and they just kind of let it slip. I don't think they're as good as last year. I mean, they're missing Fafa Pico, who's probably the second or third best player in the NHL or the NASL last year.
Yeah, Pico's a big loss. They did add a few players this year, which it's kind of scary. It's Danny Sanchez. He's a Spanish player. they added. And he's kind of like one of those guys that goes around to all these like second-rate leagues, you know, like the Australian League. He's all over the world. But he can score goals, and he's more than good enough to do some damage in the NASL. So watch out for Danny Sanchez. He's a midfielder. And another guy is his official name's Leo Da Silva Moura. And he's been he's already got 2 goals this season. And he's pretty much played his whole career. And what team did he play for, John, in Brazil?
Flamengo.
And he's more of a defensive mid, but he can score goals as well. So there's some players to watch on Tampa. Fort Lauderdale, I made this mistake earlier, yeah. So the strikers, I think the big difference this year is their coaching. Last year they had that. Is it German or Austrian coach?
Austrian coach, yeah.
Yeah. What's his name?
Herzing or something?
Herzing.
No. Frogsteiner.
Oh, right, yeah.
I don't know where that came from. Almost.
John, just throw out a German name. Last year I thought they had one of the best managers in the league. I know I say that a lot. I said that about Minnesota's manager last week.
Well, it has a lot to do with the new owners. You know, they wanted to bring in their own people. They have Ronaldo now, who owns, a 20% stake or something of the team.
He's like their JC to the Brooklyn Nets. It just doesn't matter. But.
Yeah, well, but he does probably have some connections to the South American players, so it's, no coincidence that they brought in a couple of Brazilians.
Yeah, for sure. But this new coach, he's Argentine, and he's never really, he's coached 2 professional clubs before in Bolivia, but both times they're very short stints, 4 months and 6 months. And he was actually working with an academy system in South Florida, and they hired this guy. And he was being interviewed in the Miami Herald, and he even said that he was surprised to get the job. He didn't think he would ever coach at this level. And I don't know, I think a lot of the reason why they didn't do so well was not adjusting in the game against Edmonton. So I think we can out-coach them on Saturday. We can expose some weaknesses, hopefully.
Yeah, to me, Fort Lauderdale this year are a bit of an unknown, so hopefully they'll surprise me out with how badly they will be beaten.
Yeah, it definitely should be a winnable game for the Fury. And, you know, to get 2 wins back-to-back at home, hopefully back-to-back-to-back at home after Edmonton, would be huge going and moving forward into the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's an easy win, though. You saw Fort Lauderdale on the weekend there. The midfield moves the ball very, very well, and they can be dangerous on the attack. So it's going to be a treat for the fans, to see these Spanish and Brazilian midfielders, and then De Guzman on our side. And it's going to be some beautiful football.
Yeah, it should be a treat for the fans. What also should be a treat for you guys is the next segment, where we do a Voyagers special section, and we're also going to interview Dwayne Rollins and Benjamin Massey.
Okay, welcome back. With us, we have Benjamin Massey from Maple Leaf Forever. Great blog. You should really check it out. Lots of great Canadian stories on there if you're a big fan of Canadian soccer like we all are. Ben, welcome to Ours is the Fury.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So this week, the big tournament, the one that's so dear to all our hearts, is starting the Voyagers Cup, as we like to always call it. We're just wondering... what you can tell us about the history of this trophy. I know you've been a long-time supporter of the national team and Canadian soccer in general. What do you know about the history of this trophy?
Well, personally, I only started getting into the Voyagers Cup back in 08, but it dates back to 2002. It's probably one of the oldest trophies that Canadian soccer teams, professionally at least, still play for. And the Montreal Impact have won the thing just continuously. I believe they've taken 9 out of the total trophies since 2002, and Toronto FC's got 4, and nobody else has ever won it. So it started off as just a competition in the USL First Division. The Canadian clubs would play amongst each other during the league, and the team with the best record against the others would get the trophy, and nobody really noticed for a while. Until one day, Toronto FC came into MLS, and Canada got a CONCACAF Champions League's place. And the guys at TSA said, we need some sort of national pro club championship. Oh, wait, there's a trophy right over there that looks pretty nice. And
now we're in the modern era. That's how it began. Just a supporters thing that blew up.
Yeah, so the trophy itself, I heard there was a story where like the fans actually pooled their money together and paid for it.
That's exactly right. The Voyageurs, who back in the early 2000s were just a couple dozen guys who vaguely knew each other from getting pissed by eggs thrown on them by Costa Rica. You may have to cut that word. I'm not sure what the language rating is on this podcast.
We're PG-13, yeah.
All right. But, yeah, it was just this very small grassroots organization that had no organization to speak of that chatted on a free internet message board. They decided to chip in and buy what's actually a very handsome little trophy, just so that Canadian professional clubs had something to play for. There was nothing else to do. The Open Canada Cup was mostly ignored by the pro teams. The Toronto Lynx entered a couple times. There was simply no way for fans of the Montreal Impact, the Toronto Lynx, the Vancouver Whitecaps, the Edmonton Aviators, the Calgary Storm, to measure each other. And this cup filled that void. And like I said, it's just grown year after year.
Yeah, and do you think it'll continue to grow? Have you heard anything or know anything about maybe them opening up the cup to more leagues and more teams in Canada?
Well, that's been sort of a dream of quite a few people for quite a long time. Probably since 2008 when they had the first modern cup for the CONCACAF Champions League place. But the trouble is, as long as semi-professional soccer in Canada is so divided and so... in British Columbia, which is where I live, our top regional league play in the winter. And everywhere else in the country, they play in the summer. There's just no unity below the level of the NASL in this country. So it's really, really hard to get a League One Ontario team, say, into the Voyageurs Cup, especially when there's only five professional teams playing against them, so they have a decent chance of winning it. And having to go off to Belize and Honduras and play at Estadio Azteca, all these carpenters. It's not like the U.S. Open Cup, where there's, 35 fully professional teams, and the chances of a semi-pro team winning it are nil. There's real upset potential in Canada, and I think that's part of what's slowing it down.
Yeah, and also like the travel and the financial, like you have a team like Assumption in the PLSQ, and like to expect them to fly to Vancouver and play the Whitecaps would almost put the team in bankruptcy kind of thing. So there's some issues.
Of course, to a big extent, you can avoid that by having a regional playdown. So you just have the one champion out of Eastern Canada and the one champion out of Western Canada. And if you've got decent sponsorship, that can work. But every additional round, or heaven forbid, if they win the whole thing, is going to be a big added burden.
Right. So I've known you from like the Voyageurs boards, and I've just, we've always talked a little bit about soccer in Canada. I never really put a name to the face until I saw you one day. You're actually giving the Voyageurs Cup out one year. I was wondering if you could just share with us that story.
Well, not that much of a story, to be honest. Every year, a Voyageur brings out the Voyageurs Cup in the final match. And in 2013, when this happened, it was the first time that the final game of the Voyageurs Cup would be held in Western Canada. So there was a need to find somebody to bring this trophy out. Most of the Voyageurs live out east in Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa. And I guess I was the first person who said yes. And so I just went down to the sideline about 15 minutes before the game ended, at which point the Whitecaps were still winning. And I was chatting to a very nice CSA person, watching the Whitecaps try to hold on, and then watching Hassoun Kamara head in that corner kick and just crumbling, and just spending 10 minutes in sheer despair. The Whitecaps failed to fight back. And as I was walking out onto the pitch, I remember this very clearly because I had my phone in my pocket. And I was holding the trophy, and as I was walking towards the plinth, I just felt the phone going boom, boom, boom. Everyone said, "Wait a minute, is that Lord Bob looking like he's getting punched in the face by the gods of soccer on live national television?" It was a lot of fun.
I couldn't imagine what it would. I totally felt for you at that moment because I know you're a big Whitecaps fan. I couldn't imagine standing on the sidelines with a trophy about to give it to the Ottawa Fury and then having the team lose late like that. But you did an amazing job. We're all very proud, and I think that's a great tradition that a Voyageur gives out the Voyageurs Cup every year. And that's one of the
it
great
really
things.
Is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something you see off and on in North America, but with things like the Cascadia Cup starting to come to prominence out west over here, people are realizing that supporters can have a big influence on the competition as well as just what's going on in the stands. And every little piece of tradition like this, I think, is something we really have to hold on to and to nurture.
Yeah, that's true. And traditions are starting to build here in Ottawa. And I know Vancouver Whitecaps have a very rich tradition going back 30, 40 years now. And it's really great to see all these traditions in Canadian soccer. Just before we let you go, I just want to know who are you supporting this year? And maybe some predictions, 1 through 5.
I think I've got to be in for FC Edmonton. I'm kind of a little sour on the Whitecaps just because they didn't represent Canadian players very well the last few years, I thought. That said, they've been giving Canadians some good minutes this year, and I'm in a pretty good mood that I'm from Edmonton, and I like the Eddies, and I like an underdog, so I've got to cheer on FC Edmonton, I think. And because I'm such a homer, I also think the Eddies are going to knock off Ottawa in the first round. It'll be close. Ottawa, I think, wins the home leg, but the Eddies will probably get a 2-goal win in Edmonton, and I'm going to call it 3-1 on aggregate.
Okay, we'll write that one down. Great. Well, thank you for joining me today, Benjamin Massey. Where can we find you online?
I'm on Twitter at Lord_Bob, or you can visit my infrequently updated blog, maple-leaf-forever.com.
Great. Thank you so much.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
So thank you to Ben Massey, who's at Lord Bob or maybe Lord_Bob. I'm not sure on Twitter. And next we're going to interview Dwayne Rollins. So enjoy.
All right.
Joining us now is Dwayne Rollins, most famously known from the 24th Minute, also has a great podcast called The Two Solitudes with Kevin Lemay. And thanks for joining us, Dwayne.
No worries.
Yeah, so today's episode, we're talking about the Voyageurs Cup, and we're just wondering if you had any insight about how the Voyageurs Cup started, if you know any personal details about that.
Yeah, I mean, it started, the Voyageurs are the name of the Canadian supporters group, as most of us know that are listening to this likely. It started back around 2000 when a bunch of fans just on the boards, the Voyageurs board at the time, were sick of the fact that the CSA, which truly was a disaster back in that day, wasn't doing anything to grow the club game in this country. There was individual entrepreneurs which had teams going in various parts of the country, most famously the Impact and the Whitecaps were going at that time, also the Toronto Lynx in Toronto, although they were kind of a mom-and-pops operation, but still the three major cities had teams, and Edmonton came in for a while, Calgary came in for a while, so there was a vibrant sort of entrepreneurial, if unconnected, club scene going on, and the fans just decided that there needed to be a trophy to recognize a Canadian championship. We couldn't have a Canadian league, so they started a fundraising effort, $5, $10, $20, people donated on the Voyageurs board back at that time, and they bought the trophy. For years and years, it was just presented to the team that had the best regular season record against each other. There wasn't a special competition on it because the fans didn't have that much money to do that. The CSA wasn't really greatly involved at that point, if at all. And they would just make sure that the cup got to whatever city that it was being presented in. And a fan there, kind of like the Cascadia Cup now, if you know the history out there, would present it to the team. The Montreal Impact became very eager to be part of this. They were the pro team that most embraced it, and
help that they wanted every year during the fan-driven aspect of it, but they would provide them with, you know, support in the sense that they would allow them to present on the field and they would make a big deal about it in their programs and things like that. So that's kind of where it got its genesis for, as a fan-driven cup competition.
Okay. So what's maybe the dearest memory to your heart, you know, from a game or something that happened in regards to the Voyagers Cup?
Well, you know, in retrospect, it's going to seem weird as a guy that at the time, you know, was a TFC supporter. I still am. They're hard some days. But it was a loss or a draw, I guess. The game in 2008 when the Montreal Impact won the first ever Canadian championship, that was when it was recognized by the pro teams, and they set up the separate competition, the branded competition at the time, which was not Amway, but it was Nutrilite at that time. And it was the final game of that competition where Toronto needed to win to capture the Voyageurs Cup. The Impact needed a win or a draw to do so. They got the draw at BMO Field. There were 20,000 people there. They were into the game. They were excited by the game. The fans were intense. There was a big traveling support from Montreal there. It turned out Don Garber was in the stadium that day because the All-Star game was taking place in Toronto a couple days later. Fans were upset when Toronto didn't get the win. The players were upset, and it just seemed that that day was the day that this little thing that was just a fan's idea, you know, 8 years earlier, became a real competition. And it seemed, you know, very surreal to me that was there watching those early days develop to see this highly professional and organized situation happening out there. The other memory that I really took to heart was seeing Torsten Frings, of course, a guy that played in the World Cup and the highest levels of the game, holding the Voyageurs Cup up, and just thinking to myself that this is a guy that's played everywhere, that's, you know, played in the Champions League, that's played in the World Cup, that's just won a trophy, that was really kind of the invention. The genesis came from just frustrated Canadian fans, and it was just a prideful moment to know that that now it was this real thing and that fan-driven initiatives can work.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story, and I think it's one a Canadian soccer fan should be very proud of. Long-suffering Canadian soccer fans, I should mention. Enough about the past. Looking towards the future, what do you see in the future for this cup tournament?
Well, I do know, and I for those that don't know, I do a lot of work with League One Ontario here, and Dino Rossi, the commissioner of that league, I speak to him quite a bit, and I know that it's his ambition to have the League One Ontario teams, along with the PLSQ teams in Quebec, be included in some way to open up the competition more. It's complicated because you need to have the resources behind your team to both be able to travel to those games, and also if you were to win it, you'd have to travel all over North America. So not every club team is as romantic as the notion of making a truly open cup is. It's not realistic at this point in time. There just simply aren't enough teams. But I know from talking to Dino, he feels that that cooperatively, the League One Ontario, the PLSQ, hopefully a BC league at that level down the road, could pool money together, could pool resources to help whatever team evolve from that competition. And I do think, I'm pretty confident, you will see an entry point for teams that are below the fully professional level that will come into play sometime, probably in the 2018 tournament, because it's locked in stone to 2017, but after that, it's open for evaluation and interpretation, and I do believe that you'll see the winner of the Interprovincial Cup, which was first contested last year. Toronto Sea Academy won that competition. They're hoping to open that up to BC in the near future. That winner will then get some kind of qualification spot into the main draw, so to speak, which of course starts tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, when we're taping this with Edmonton and Ottawa right now.
Yeah, I think it'd mean a lot to Canadian soccer fans everywhere. You know, people from a smaller place like Saskatoon or a Trois-Rivières, Quebec, if their local team could like have the opportunity to face a giant like the Montreal Impact or Toronto FC or Vancouver Whitecaps, I think that'd really mean a lot to the local fans, to those teams, and it'd do a lot to grow the game in Canada.
No, absolutely. You know, you see what right now one of the complications is the USL teams are affiliated with the TFC Vancouver Montreal, of course, and the clubs there will suggest, well, how can we play our affiliates? But what you see it happen in the US Open Cup, it's not out of the question.
So if you include those three teams, whichever one finishes with the highest regular season points or something, could then play the winner of the Interprovincial Cup, and the winner of that could, you know, there's some way to do it, I think. And I believe that that might be what we see in the near future.
Yeah, that's great. So that's pretty much all we have to ask you. I just want to, of course, you're probably supporting TFC this year. Can you give us a 1-5 prediction?
Where they're going to finish.
Yeah.
I do think that the problem with TFC is it's never been a micro problem. That's to say, it's never really been the individual talents or the coaches or whatever. In my mind, it's always been a macro problem. That's the ownership and the origin or whatever's around TFC has not allowed that team to keep together talent, to keep together coaching staffs, to allow them to grow into themselves. So my prediction on how TFC finishes is entirely dependent on how willing MLSE, the ownership, is to maintain the core that is in place now. I do believe that if you can fix a little bit of problems at the back, that there's more than enough talent, especially up front. Jabinko has been wonderful. Josie, I think, will turn it on at some point. There's a lot of good talent there in the attacking, the midfield and the attacking positions to give them more than enough to finish in the top six. But my concern, as someone who observes MLSE, that's heard the rumors in recent days, is they're going to blow it all up again. And if they do that, they're not going to make playoffs, and it's going to be the same old, because you can't repeat the same behavior and expect a different result. That is a definition of insanity.
Okay, so you predicted Ottawa Fury to win the Voyagers Cup. Awesome.
Oh, yes. Awesome. Yeah, I know, yeah. I went into a TFC prediction there. I misunderstood. Yeah, no, yeah, the Fury clearly are going to win it.
We all agree.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Julian's going to score the winning goal against TFC in the final.
Yeah, it'll be his fifth goal in the last 10 years.
Yeah, or it might be Wiedemann, though. I could see Wiedemann doing it. That would work, too.
Yeah, awesome. Where can we find your stuff online?
CanadianSoccerNews.com. Everything is there. Or on Twitter, if you're on Twitter, at 24th Minute.
Thank you, Dwayne. It's good to have you on again. I'm sure it won't be the last time, hopefully. And just as a little trivia, at Fury Fanatic tweeted earlier that 4 Fury players have won the V Cup already so far. Do you guys know who it is?
Ooh, wow.
Actually, I worded that wrong. The V Cup has been won 4 times by Fury players. By whom?
Okay, so they're not 4 different players.
No, it's there could be one that has multiple, for example.
Julian de Guzman and Ryan Richter.
Not Ryan Richter.
Wiedemann?
No.
Tim, do you have a guess?
Ubi.
Yes, Ubi. Oh, Ubi won at Montreal Impact, and then de Guzman won it 3 times with TFC. Well, that's pretty much it for our show. I hope you enjoyed it, and you can find us at Ottawa Fury. Also, check us out on Facebook. And we have an email address.
Ours is theferypodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. And now it's time for Tim to say...
Toodles.
Mr. Loop, Mr. Loop, Mr. Loop.